From WXXI News, this is Connections. I'm Evan Dawson. Our connection this hour was made when the U.S. Department of Defense recently confirmed that long-rumored videos of unexplained flying objects are real. At least a few of them are real. The videos are real, we should say. The DOD is not saying the videos show, for example, alien spacecraft. In fact, the videos are part of a long line of such videos that UFO enthusiasts have trumpeted as possible evidence of alien visitation. The problem for them has been that time after time, those videos have been debunked. A bug on the lens of a camera, a weather balloon. It's a long list. This time, the U.S. government is at least saying, look, there are certain things that we cannot currently explain. What logic tells us is that the first likely explanation is natural. The second likely explanation is some kind of earthly aircraft, a newer technology, poking around maybe in a neighborhood where it's not invited. And I say this as someone who assumes that there has been technological life in the universe beyond Earth. Why not? That's my bias. I'm a believer. I mean, there are roughly 10 billion trillion Earth-like planets for life to take a crack at. That's pretty decent odds. I think it's probably happened, but I'm also a careful skeptic. And evidence matters here. Looking for life in the sky doesn't just mean green men in metal suits. It means Dyson spheres and technosignatures and the biology of the stars, little markers that indicate something is going on apart from just cosmic dust out there. And there are scientists working on this every day. So yes, this hour, let's talk a little bit about what the Pentagon's been acknowledging and the fact that the questions are legitimate. The questions, whether they're from senators like former Senator Harry Reid or Marco Rubio or so many others, or just UFO enthusiasts. It's okay to ask these questions. It's okay to look at a video and say, what is that? Why don't we know? What are the possibilities? But extraordinary claims require extraordinary evidence, and let's talk about how we're going to get there, and then beyond just what the Pentagon's saying, let's talk about the work that scientists are engaging in to really get a look at our world beyond our little atmosphere. Longtime guest on the show, Adam Frank, astrophysicist at the University of Rochester, author of Light of the Stars, among other works. Adam, welcome back to the program.
Oh, it's great to be back.
Jacob Huck Misra is with us, a senior research investigator at Blue Marble Space Institute of Science. Jacob, welcome. Thank you for being with us.
Absolutely. It's a pleasure.
And Ravi Kumar Koparapu is with us, a planetary scientist at NASA Goddard Space Flight Center. Ravi, welcome. Thanks for being with us.
Thank you for having me.
Come on, Adam Frank. Finally have a chance to say it's aliens. How many years have we been waiting for that chance on this program?
It's probably not aliens. But as this means the discussion, let me put it this way. The standards of evidence are not even close yet to being able to say you can say it's aliens. So it's
okay.
Something's going on, but, aliens, I'm not jumping there, no.
There was a very, I'm going to call it credulous report on 60 Minutes about this that got people buzzing. The New Yorker wrote a long piece on this. That was fun to read, I admit. But I do wonder, in light of all this, Adam, do you look at some of these videos and at least say, I'm not jumping all the way here, but this is kind of funky. I don't know what this is.
Well, I certainly say I don't know what this is. I certainly say, and I think that's the right scientific conclusion, is to say, I don't know what this is. But, going from there to it's a advanced civilization that is traveling across the stars to spy on us and doesn't want to be seen, but somehow can't stop from being seen. That's the thing that was, the media wasn't doing a great job of showing people that that's the jump that is unwarranted.
Yeah, my problem with the 60 Minutes report, for example, is that I think every time we talk about this, when we acknowledge that we don't know what the videos are, we also have to acknowledge that there's a real human, I think it's very human, to start to conjure up some wild ideas, and that's understandable. But we have to, I think, teach the standards of evidence and scientific standards and how we go about going from A all the way to Z. And jumping a lot of letters in that process, Adam Frank, I think every report should probably include a little bit of whether it's a disclaimer or some sort of language about that. I don't know how you feel.
Well, like what I've been saying as I've talked to people about this is that if you use the same kind of quote-unquote science to link the UFOs to aliens and tried to build a cell phone with that kind of science, that kind of logic, you'd end up with a brick. Or if you tried to, make, for example, a virus vaccine using the same kind of logic, you'd end up with something that melted your face off. So, you know, the question here, and this is a great time to ask ourselves, how does science know what it knows, and how does it know what it doesn't know? So the UAPs are absolutely of interest, and they should absolutely be studied with, you know, absolute transparency. But the link to aliens, you know, is just there's just not the evidence there to say, oh yeah, these are actually, you know, devices from another civilization.
Right. And so before I turn to Jacob, before I turn to Jacob and Ravi on this, Adam, what happens if we investigate certain videos? And yeah, one of the videos was a bug on the lens. One of the videos was a weather balloon. Another was a hoax. But let's say there's a couple of videos where we go, you know, we've looked at this and we're just going to have to sort of walk away not knowing. I think the danger there is we're sort of training the public to think, well, if you can't tell me definitively, then it's aliens.
Right, right. That exactly is the drama. I think what's really going to happen here, what's going to have to happen is we're going to have to start from scratch. You know, we're going to have to, and this is in the report that came out, is there's going to have to be an investment of funds to build kind of a worldwide network of sensors, whether it's satellites or ground-based stations, so that every time somebody in an airplane sees something they don't understand, they hit a red button, and then, you know, the satellites and sensors turn to that part of the sky, do their best to record it, and then, you know, we'll know what kind of sensors we're dealing with, we'll know what kind of satellites we're dealing with, those have all been characterized. And then you can build up an appropriate data set. But the problem is, yeah, these sort of one-offs, there's just, on some level, there's not much you can do with them.
Right, and that's why I just want people to kind of keep in mind that it's okay to say, what is this? I don't know. But then if the next thing you say is, and therefore, aliens, we've really skipped ahead here. Jacob Huck Misra, how do you see not only sort of the declassifying of these videos, but some of the speculation that's going on? The public interest is cranked up to a level I've never seen. You even have elected members of Congress and the U.S. Senate talking about this. So what's your mindset on this, Jacob?
Well, in general, I find this to be an encouraging step. I mean, there's certainly a lot of unwarranted speculation, you know, in the general public, and then the way journalists cover this, I don't really disagree with anything Adam said. But the other thing I would add to it is, as a scientist, the study of these objects, even just saying that you're interested in them as a scientist, has been a bit of a taboo. A lot of scientists have been afraid that this would be a career killer. Just to acknowledge that a small fraction of these things might be unexplained, and maybe it's worth a little bit of your career time if there's funding to investigate it. I think that's important that the tides are changing now. It's becoming more socially acceptable in science circles to say that this is a legitimate science question. Not to say that it's aliens, but to say we don't know what this is, and in fact we need to collect more data before we can even start to prefer particular hypotheses.
Do you think that stigma then really is eroding, and is it eroding quickly, or is it still there?
It's still there, but it's eroding, and faster than I thought it would. I think the fact that, you know, the U.S. government has published this report, they were, you know, responsibly agnostic, but they were very clear that there are some things that we don't understand in this other category that don't fit the bug on the lens and other sorts of things.
Yep.
And the fact that, you know, NASA has made an official statement about this, and that they acknowledge that this would be something interesting to study, even if it does not have to do with technosignatures, it's still interesting as a science question. I think this is all encouraging in the right direction. I guess the one thing I liked about the report, even though it was only 9 pages in its full glory, it did encourage and call for other agencies that are already collecting data to work together. So, you know, I agree with Adam that as scientists, we would need a totally new network that has no classified instruments that we can really build something from scratch. But at the same time, what the report is calling for is further probably classified work where agencies that are already doing Earth system monitoring can actually share data. And I mean, I'll be honest, I don't have high faith in government to do interagency projects efficiently, but they're calling for it, and I think that's encouraging.
Okay. I'm also curious if you think that we should acknowledge that, you know, some of the videos, it's clearly something that there's something moving around in the air, and it might be technological, I mean, which might mean it's earthly technology, and it may be technology from a different nation, as I mentioned, sort of poking around in a different airspace. I mean, we've seen that before. That can happen. But whatever it is, if it's technological, should it be a little bit of a red flag? Because, I mean, if you actually play it out, if you say, okay, all we know is it's probably technological. If it's earthly and it's not ours, it may be a problem. If it is not earthly, if we're going to go all the way there, and it's got whatever this is has the ability to get all the way to us and then just going to bop around our atmosphere and zip out of here, whatever that is, has probably got the capacity to do whatever it wants with us. I think that there's something probably mildly concerning if it turns out that some of this stuff is technological. I don't know how you feel about that.
Absolutely. You know, and here's a different way I could phrase it that doesn't even require posing any hypotheses. So there's something that's been spotted in the sky. It's been called objects because it's been seen and radar spotted it. So as far as the military is concerned, at least for these specific things, they're objects, not just ethereal gases or something. But the military has, and governments around the world have said that they don't know what these things are. So that is actually a bad move for government to maintain its sovereignty. A government maintains sovereignty. It maintains the highest authority over the people that are its subjects by being the final authority and being able to explain how everything is. And when there's something that, you know, our air patrol can't explain, it's in their best interest to maintain sovereignty, to pretend like it doesn't exist. So to come out and say there are these class of objects, some of them we can't explain, and we don't actually know much about them at all, and we can't even rule out that they could be a threat under some cases, that's not a smart move in terms of a government for maintaining its sovereignty. So that tells me that it's something credible.
Okay. Interesting. The last point before I turn to Ravi, Jacob, is am I wrong if I'm sort of doing the how are you going to weigh the evidence? Am I wrong to think that if we had any evidence of technological alien civilizations ever visiting us, there's no way that the most recent president not named Joe Biden wouldn't have told us all on like the second day?
You know, I don't know what presidents know. I can tell you that I did hear an interview with Bill Clinton, who, when he was president, he looked into Roswell because he wanted to know for whatever reasons. And, I mean, I don't think what he was told, he said he found no evidence that there's aliens, and the Roswell story is nothing we need to talk about as anything serious. But just as a historical fact, he did make the comment that as president, there could be secrets that exist in the nation that he was lied to about. So that was the thing he said in an interview. That's not to say that there are aliens in Roswell that he doesn't know about. But, you know, I think we can't assume necessarily that all our presidents know everything that's going on, regardless of aliens, even just other secrets that are important for the nation. I think even the commander-in-chief may not have all the information available at all times.
All right, let me turn to Ravi, and let me just say, I'm getting emails from people who are very much believe that what we are seeing is technological alien life. Somebody tells me that I am out of my element talking about this. Listeners, you have no idea how much I have read about this. None. Please stop making any assumptions that just because you have done some reading that nobody else has done some reading. I'm frankly tired of that. I have done an unbelievable amount of reading on this. Do you know how many videos I've watched? I've watched videos from people who believe every one of these things is green men. And I look for the most possible open door here. I am a believer that there is technological civilizational life out there or has been. And I just want to have a high bar before we believe we've seen it up close. But you have no idea how much I've read. So that's all I'm going to say to listeners. Okay, Ravi. where are you on all this stuff, Ravi?
So I think as far as technological life is concerned, we are actually doing some traditional astronomical research and work that Adam and Jacob and several others are part of. So that is a scientific way of doing this work to show that there could be and find evidence of life outside Earth. As far as this report is concerned, I think it is... I liked it in the sense that it was truly agnostic, like Jacob mentioned. No conclusions and no speculations. That's the way I like it. That's the way I like my science.
Are you optimistic that we're now on a path where, as Jacob says, the stigma of even talking about this stuff will go away, but we will be able to do it in a way that doesn't presuppose anything, including alien civilizational life?
So I think the stigma is, as Jacob mentioned, slowly going away, I believe. If it'll go away permanently is a different question. But at least we are now talking openly about it, right? So just as we are all doing right now. And this study of the UAP or UFO is not new. The scientific establishment has studied this 40, 50 years ago with Professor Alan Hynek and James McDonald, Professor James McDonald from University of Arizona. So they have done this. And so it is a scientific inquiry we should be focusing on and not on the speculation and create a taboo based on the speculation. And so let's find out what it is. Let's do a scientific analysis. Let's collect the data and see what it comes out to be. If it comes out to be nothing, that's fine.
Yeah, absolutely. I am so there. I want to be able to investigate all of this stuff and do it in ways that come with no stigma, come with open minds, but also comes with high bars of evidence. And then let's follow wherever it leads us. I mean, let's do that. And that doesn't mean, you know, that we can't do that going forward. I think that seems to be much more open now. And for those listeners who are saying, boy, you trust the government too much. I do not trust the government on this. I'm kind of with Jacob on this one. Why would we trust the government? But I also know that if we're going to protect secrets, it takes a humongous apparatus of people who are all equally aligned for decades and decades to protect every one of these secrets. And that gets very difficult, too. Ravi, do you trust the government on this one?
I'd like to pass on that. I fully trust let me just say this. If NASA finds life on other planets, because we have been trying to do this with our missions, right? So with rovers and telescopes and so on, we would be more than happy to share the excitement with the general public. Because what else? I mean, that is one of the goals of NASA astrobiology, right? To actually find life on other planets. So nothing would make me happier to share that excitement with the public.
All right, let me grab one question from a listener, and then we're going to kind of move in different directions here. I mean, our guests all have different expertise, areas of research, and they can talk about what it means to really be looking for, and frankly, looking in ways that 10, 20, 100 years ago we couldn't do for signatures out there, for evidence, for indicators. But let me first grab Kevin in Rochester on the phone. Hi, Kevin, go ahead.
Hi, yes, Evan. Thank you for having me. I basically just wanted to state that I think there's a lot of TV shows like the History Channel, Discovery Channel, that have things on like ancient aliens, and they perpetuate what isn't history and what isn't fact and make people believe that aliens are real, which I personally do not believe. I don't think there's any science that supports it. And also the aliens have been here in the past. And I believe that in one sense, like say with the ancient Mayan civilizations or ancient Egypt, in one sense, it's perpetuating an age-old racism that says that these cultures couldn't have built their own civilizations, whereas like the Mayan civilization is just as old as the Roman civilization, but no one ever questions who built the Colosseum. Mm-hmm. And also, I think it's, again, if there is alien life out there, it could be the size of bacteria or eukaryote, or something, and we'd never know. It would never even know about us or care about us. So
can I ask you something about that last point? So
sure,
a little bit what you're talking about there with sort of bacterial life or single cell life or maybe non-complex life. And who, by the way, who gets to decide complexity? Maybe we think we're very complex and we're just not. But who knows? But what you're kind of talking about is the great filter. This idea that life can pop up in pretty simple forms in a lot of different spaces in the universe, but for it to become kind of sentient, technological, traveling is a different deal, and we're not exactly sure why we did, but that may be a barrier that life doesn't often cross. Is that your belief, that small single-cell life, that likely, but what we're experiencing here, unlikely?
So my belief is, I don't know if it was Carl Sagan that said that it's pure hubris to believe that we're alone. It was somebody, I believe, said that, right?
He probably would have believed it. Yeah, sure.
Yes, but I think it's pure hubris to believe that there is alien life out there, that we are not. If you think that there's alien life out there, I think you don't have an understanding of the complexity of life on Earth and the rarity of life on Earth. all the things that had to happen for life to happen here and for us as humans to become conscious and even aware and ask these sort of questions. There's been millions of life forms on this planet that have existed before us that never cared about life on another planet. Or if they did, we wouldn't really know because they couldn't communicate it in any form that we'd understand.
Yeah. Okay.
Does that make sense?
Yeah, no, sure, it does. And I'm curious to know what our guests think. I appreciate the phone call,
sure.
Kevin. I mean, maybe my own sort of personal law is that we shouldn't presuppose how complex or advanced we are, because on one hand, we've got space travel that we've already done. That's amazing. But on the other hand, you've probably been to three-way rest stop bathrooms, and human beings are capable of a full spectrum of impressive or unimpressive things. Let me just kind of go down the list here. Adam Frank, there's a lot there. What do you make of what you heard from Kevin?
Well, it's funny because the three of us on this, you know, on your show today are all right in the middle of working on a paper together that actually is examining this issue. Because what we're really examining is particularly the signatures. You know, what would, if we go out and look in the universe, should we expect that it's going to be easier to find signatures of just that kind of microbial life or of technological life? And there's things, I mean, Kevin, those are great questions you pose. And of course, the only way to find out is to actually go look. But here's an interesting thing about technosignatures, is that if even one civilization, just one, forms and becomes spacefaring, they can spread, you know, they can do something that microbial life can't do, which is they can go to other planets and they can go to other stellar systems. So it's possible that just a single technological civilization, if it arose, could spread throughout the entire galaxy, leaving markers, leaving signatures that we could find everywhere. Whereas like a single planet where just microbial life forms, the only place you can look is that planet. It'll never go anywhere else. So you know, I think you raise really interesting questions. The only way to answer it is to actually look. But there are reasons to think that technological life, should it form, could actually become quite multiplicative.
Okay. Robbie, what do you think?
I completely agree with Adam on this one. And I think that we have the capabilities now and the kind of resources and the telescopes, time, and the tools to look for these technological civilizations. Literally, I think I'm super excited and super stoked about this, because we are, for the first time in the history of the humans, are at the stage where within our lifetime, it may be possible, very, very likely, that we may be able to discover life on other planets.
Okay. But Ravi, again, define life. We're talking life of any kind.
So I think there is, yes, of any kind, and even microbial, because Kevin mentioned microbial life as well. So I'm going to wrap all of them together in one.
Okay. Jacob, what do you think?
Well, I mean, I agree with everything that has been said. But I think, you know, I agree with Kevin's points that he made. Those are great science questions, and we don't know the answer. And so that's why I actually don't say that I believe that there are aliens anywhere. I don't know actually what the likelihood is, the frequency of microbial life or something like it is on other planets. I don't know what the frequency is of technological life. There's been very limited searches that have been done. And so, you know, just like we were talking about UFOs before, I don't have a preferred hypothesis. I think it's worth looking, but I don't actually believe that there's aliens. I just believe that it's worth doing this science to try to understand this. And then I guess the other point I would say is, I think, you know, and we can get into this conversation a little bit, you know, the ways that we try to look for signs of technology, but it is possible that the universe could be teeming with advanced life, technological life, and we have no way of recognizing it, or we're uninteresting to them, or we just coexist in ways that don't intersect a lot. Like, we have to search in ways that we can, but that is a possibility that, you know, we're the ants of the solar system, and there's galactic overlords, and we would never recognize them. So that's not to say we give up and we don't try, but I think there is some hubris in acknowledging that we can do our best to search, but our best could be insufficient to find what's really there.
Oh, it's dispiriting. I need answers here. You all promised answers. That was the reason you're on this program. I'm mostly kidding. In fact, I'm really grateful that our guests are with us, and listeners, if you're just joining us, I asked our guest to come on in light of all of the recent sort of hubbub about the Pentagon releasing and declassifying these videos of UAP, which I think is a better term than UFO, UAP, unexplained aerial phenomena, and the idea that it's okay to not know, and there has to be, I think, a little bit more space given to ask questions, but also to understand that a scientific process and method has to be in place if we're really going to go about trying to get answers for this stuff. And some of the stuff can get explained pretty quickly. Some cannot. And that's why our guests are here. Adam Frank, an astrophysicist at the University of Rochester, author of multiple books, including Light of the Stars. Jacob Huck-Misra, a senior research investigator at Blue Marble Space Institute of Science. Ravi Kumar Koparapu, who is a planetary scientist at NASA Goddard Space Flight Center. So let me ask all of you to kind of build on what Jacob just said here as we talk about looking for these signatures. Jacob, tell me a little bit about what you do and what we are currently capable of doing, what we might soon be capable of doing, and how that informs what we are seeing in the stars.
Problems that Ravi and Adam and I are studying is, how can we detect things like atmospheric pollutants? You know, so to just step back a second, one of the ways we just look at planets, and then we think about looking for life, and then maybe technology, is to see if we can peer into the atmospheres of planets. And so, there's telescopes we have now, and then telescopes that are going to be launched in the near future, like the James Webb Telescope, and then telescopes that are in a design phase that would be, even have higher resolution for being able to resolve planets. The idea is if you can not just find planets, but then, characterize the gases in their atmosphere, that'll tell you something about the planet. And if you found something like water, well, water is something that is associated with life on Earth, so that might be exciting. And maybe you found water and oxygen and methane, and that's been one idea for a biosignature, evidence in a planet's atmosphere of life. And so, to kind of build on that, we're thinking about what are some technosignatures, what things could be in a planet's atmosphere that would tell you not just that there's life, but that there's industrial processes or something else that we would call technology. And so, one class of compounds we've been thinking about is pollutants and how detectable could atmospheric pollution be on some of these planets that we might study soon.
And now when it comes to looking for those pollutants, Jacob, how much better are we going to be, whether it's with our own technology or knowing what to look for? It's through the course of our lifetime right now, just another generation of human beings, how much better are we going to get at that?
We're going to get a lot better as long as we can keep funding and building the telescopes. The James Webb Telescope will build upon what the Hubble did. And then there's a series of missions that are being studied, and I believe any day now we should hear about some of the selections that are being made. And Ravi's been involved in some of this. He could tell you more of the technical details. But some of these missions, LUVOIR, HABEX, and Origins, are space telescopes that would be able to not just study, one or two Earth-like planets, which is probably what we'll get from the James Webb Space Telescope, but we could really get a statistically significant sample, dozens to 20 or maybe even 50 or so Earth-like planets in this habitable Goldilocks region. And that would be really exciting to not just search one planet and see if there's biosignatures or technosignatures, but search a bunch and get some sense of how common water or oxygen or, if we're lucky, pollution might be.
Ravi, tell me a little bit about the work, as you see it, and how much fruit it might actually bear.
So I think I'm a bit optimistic, actually. I agree with Jacob again on this, that we have some upcoming telescopes that could potentially look for signatures of life on the planets nearby. And within the next 20, 30 years, we will certainly have capability of finding life on other planets. For example, Jacob mentioned LUVOIR, HABEX, and Origin space telescopes. All three of them will find, are designed, at least in the studies, to find life on several Earth-like planets in the nearby systems. And I would also say that this would be really a great opportunity for us to expand that to technological life. I'm not going to say it's microbial, but also technological life. And we three have been working and with some other colleagues on trying to see if we can use these telescopes to see if there is what are the signs of these advanced civilizations if we point the telescopes towards them. I'd like to point out one important thing here. Serendipity is actually a really critical aspect. The discovery of the first exoplanet was not done because we were pointing a telescope to a star and trying to find a planet around other star. It was found by someone, an astronomer from Penn State, who was not even looking for exoplanets. And so I would say we might have an opportunity here when we point a new instrument towards the sky, we might find something that's unexpected.
Like a Dyson sphere. Right, Adam Frank? We were so close a few years ago. I really thought maybe Tabby Star was going to be, you know, listeners, if you remember the program, we had Tabitha Boyajian on this program talking about her and her team's research on a funky star about 1,500 light years away that was dimming at intervals, and it maybe gave off this idea that there's something spinning around in that is massive that could be what has been hypothesized as an energy delivery system. And maybe this is just the shell of that, and this was a civilization that existed a long time ago. It turned out I think it was dust. You know, it was kind of this version of the bug on the lens here. But it was fascinating for a while. And what you told us at the time was, hey, it's probably not going to be aliens, but don't laugh at the idea that we're going to check, that we're going to really push to try to know. And I like that. So what do you see as the work right now that will lead us in a direction of better knowledge on this?
Well, you know, what's amazing since then, I mean, Bajorian star, I always have a hard time doing the pronunciation.
Yeah.
That was a sea change. That represented a profound shift in how the community has been thinking about the possibility of techno signatures. Because what happened was, is they, you know, using this new telescope, right, the Kepler telescope, that was designed to look at stars in a new and interesting way by looking for, you know, little eclipses happening, they found something that they totally was different. It was not at all what they thought they were going to be finding, which was the little eclipses when a planet passes in front of the star. Instead, it was like one sharp eclipse after another. And, you know, okay, now you're presented with something that you don't know what it is, and you have to make a list of, well, what could this be? And it, of course, made sense. And it was so funny that it made such news. But, you know, Jason Wright, who's one of our collaborators on the grant, said, well, one of the things we have to consider is, yeah, perhaps they are large structures orbiting the star, alien megastructures. Who doesn't like saying alien megastructures?
I love that term.
I know. And, of course, you know, the media went crazy. You know, scientists may have found alien megastructures. But it was what was amazing about that was it was the beginning of allowing scientists to start talking about technosignatures. And then very rapidly, we went from that, you know, that sort of like, oh, my God, is it okay to sort of at least raise the possibility, to suddenly the U.S. government called, you know, NASA calls together a bunch of researchers, including, you know, the people on this call, asking us to, you know, to have a conference on technosignatures and advise them on what should the future of the field look like. And then very quickly from there, we put in a proposal and we win the first NASA grant to study technosignatures ever, you know, atmospheric technosignatures ever. So we've gone from the time of Boyajian star to now, which is really only a, you know, what is it, 6 years or so? We've gone from sort of it still being sort of a little bit, you know, risque, but taboo to even mention technosignatures, to now it's, you know, we really have an ongoing endeavor. And so we are all the three of us, the, you know, members of this grant, we're now putting in our renewal. We're now looking to renew the grant because Ravi and Jacob did a great job in these two papers showing how chlorofluorocarbons could be a atmospheric pollutant / technosignature, and nitrous oxide could also be so we have these two papers that really showed, look, even with the James Webb Space Telescope, you have the possibility of finding a an Earth-like planet with an Earth-like pollutant at nearby, you know, relatively nearby distances. And so because of that work, now we're in a great position to start building on that and formalizing it and you know, starting to look for other kinds of technosignatures, like, say, the reflection of solar panels. If you were to cover a moon in solar panels for energy collection, you would be able, we should be able to see an imprint of that in the reflected light that comes off. So it's really remarkable. People have to understand what a remarkable sea change has occurred because we've discovered all these planets, and now we're going to have the capacity to actually stare at them and look for evidence for both regular, you know, for non-technological life and technological life.
Yeah, and you make such a good point about Tabby Star, because there was all of this buzz about a possible alien megastructure, and that makes for one hell of a sexy headline. But what scientists set out to do was to say, what holes can I poke in this? Because it's probably not, and what are we going to do to really examine this critically? And somebody called this program, I still remember the phone call from a listener who said, Evan, what I like is scientists are willing to go out and try to poke holes in ideas in a way of testing how strong an idea may be, as opposed to someone who's invested in hoping something is true and is resisting any criticism of that. So that's a good thing to keep in mind here. What are scientists actually doing to maybe test certain claims here? Let me get back to your phone calls, and this is Brian in Spencerport. Hi, Brian.
Hi. You know, these things that are moving around so quickly, they're almost like pixels in a computer, the way the speed and the amazing things that they can do. That plus the fact that our most brilliant scientists are unable to come up to blend or merge, combine classical physics with quantum physics using the best computers, all seems to me to lead to the fact that we are nothing more than a computer simulation in some million year old entities. So we are nothing more than a computer simulation, and that would explain the way those things move around.
So we're all in a computer simulation.
And even Neil deGrasse has said that he's leaning, and there are more and more scientists who are into string theory who are thinking that this might be the answer, is that we are nothing more than a computer simulation.
Okay.
Have a good day.
I don't know. I don't know how good of a day I can have after that. I mean, I thought I had free will, man.
I'd love to comment on that.
I'm mostly kidding. I anything is possible. Go ahead. Yeah, go ahead.
That's a total possibility.
Yeah.
The thing with, you know, we call it the simulation hypothesis. The tricky part with the simulation hypothesis is if we're in a simulation, it's probably a perfect simulation, and it would be really hard to find evidence that's really concrete data that we like as scientists to really show us that we're in a simulation. But you also, at the same time, can't disprove that we're in a simulation, at least not very easily. The one thing I'll add quickly is I think about this all the time, as the listener says, you know, I think it's certainly fun to think about. And there's sort of two ways to think about it. And so, one, you don't lose your free will. The first one is we're just automatons in some, you know, overlord simulation where we don't really exist.
Okay.
We're just digits, right? The other one, there's a real world out there. We all have virtual reality headsets on. You know, think like the Matrix, but less dark and more uplifting. We're in the future, and everything's great, and we just want to put on a VR headset and go back to 21st century Earth for fun and live through the pandemic, because won't that be a thrill? And so, you know, in one sense, you could think of the simulation hypothesis as being the ultimate virtual reality, and we're just, you know, future humans living in reality for fun.
Okay, but it sounds to me like what you're saying, Jacob, is that is absolutely possible, but it's unlikely that we would get evidence to tell us so.
That would be really hard to tell. If you can think of an idea of how to test it, that's great. I've tried thinking, and other scientists have. It's really difficult to think of how you would ever investigate that.
Yeah, so I actually really appreciate Jacob Huckmisser's point there to Brian and others. I mean, I laughed a little because, you know, that would be a bummer if it turned out we don't have free will. But Jacob's saying we could have free will, and any of those things could be true. But I don't know, Jacob, given the fact that it's not testable, how much time it is worth spending on that possibility. What do you think?
You know, if I could even think of a way to collect data or test that hypothesis, I would put some amount of time into it. But I've put a little bit of thinking into it, and it's kind of a tautology. I cannot think of, and I've read some papers of others who've written about this. There's actually like zero ideas that have really been seriously suggested for how you even could test this. So it's even further than the UAP problem, where at least there's some anomalous sightings that happen sometimes, and we could even think about building an all-wavelength, all-sky detector system to try to observe them. That's at least we can come up with a way. The simulation hypothesis, I think, is really interesting, but I don't know of how we would test it. If I could think of an idea, I would at least see what's required and maybe try.
Yep. What do you think, Robbie?
Can I?
Adam, why don't you jump in first, and then we'll hit Robbie too. Go ahead.
I just want to pour a little bit of cold water on this, because in the sense that the simulation hypothesis requires you to say, oh, your brain is just a computer. Your brain is just, you know, it's what's called the computational model of neuroscience. I don't want to say that there, you know, there is no evidence that your brain is a computer. That, you know, that consciousness and awareness and experience may require things that really have nothing to do with a computer. It may be much more that you have to actually be embodied in a body, in a world, in order to have what we call experience. So there's a certain amount for the simulation hypothesis to be true. You have to accept a kind of, you know, you are really nothing but a meat computer in your head. And I want to say there's a big sort of set of assumptions that come with that I kind of strongly disagree with. So I do think it's true that it's possible, and it is super cool. And the logic and reasoning in the original paper that went along with it was just brilliant. But I do think, I do not believe that consciousness is reducible to neurons. So I think there's more going on with being conscious. So that's where I'll pour my little bit of cold water on that.
Okay, Robbie?
Yeah, so I think Adam and Jacob, what they're trying to convey is it's fine to have, and it's a great to have some ideas about this simulation hypothesis, where what we want to do, I think Jacob mentioned this, that we want to test this hypothesis. And so for that, we need to come up with good ideas. That's how where we are right now. That's how our science progressed. And so if there is a good idea and there is a really compelling idea out there, like the simulation hypothesis, we need to come up with ways to test it, because then we can collect robust evidence on this one and then go forward and see if our hypothesis is true or not. That's how science progresses. That's how why we have what we have right now, and that's how what we need to do.
Yeah, I mean, what if our sort of super technological alien civilization created us as a way of understanding if free will was a good idea to give to its own beings, and it's looking at our level of poverty and inequality thinking, nah,
save it for that one.
You know, it's a good thing we didn't do that.
See, that's a hypothesis, and we could search for biosignatures and technosignatures to test that hypothesis.
Okay. All right.
At least to start, and then send radio signals and try establish communication. Like, I think that you know, you can imagine any scenario you want for what aliens might be like or what might be do. But if you can get it to the point where we can at least try to search for it or think of what instrumentation, then it's okay to think about. I mean, you know, alien motives are really difficult, but you can even talk about, you know, how would you establish communication if you knew there was a technological civilization? That used to be just a science fiction question, and the fact that we could think about how to do that. So, you know, that's the trick in how to go from science fiction to science, is if you can think about how we would really do this, even if we don't have the technology now, if we just know you could design it on paper, come up with it, and the math works out, and it's physically plausible, then we can talk about it in a scientific way.
I love that.
Right.
I think that is such a valuable part. I hope if we all take one thing from this conversation, it's that Jacob really keeps hitting this point home. If you can figure out a way to design a test for something, everything should be sort of in play to consider here. I think that's wise. Robert in Fairport next on the phone. Go ahead, Robert.
Yeah, I think that one of the angles that is kind of missed here is the fact that the government has been trying to control the messaging on this for a long time, and that's why they came up with Project Blue Book in the 50s and 60s, and the management of the message goes back all the way to the 1940s. I think the most logical thing that's going on with this particular phenomenon is that the nuclear testing that was done during World War II likely, you know, sent signals into the atmosphere that other beings or other civilizations might have picked up on. And that might have aroused some curiosity. I mean, if you look at the Roswell incident, Roswell Air Force Base was the site of the first nuclear bomber group. So it's not like it was some kind of an accident that it happened there, sighting happened there. But I just think that we know a lot more, and I think the government is just dribbling out a little bit of information at a time. One of the new pieces of information that I saw from this was that some of these objects are diving into the ocean, into water, stuff like that. I've never heard that before, so that's a new bit of information.
Well, I mean, that happens all the time with weather balloons. But Robert, when it comes to explain something to me. So we do nuclear testing in the desert, and then we get a sighting at Roswell. The idea is that a technological civilization, a super technological civilization, gets some sort of a signature on that, and they come to check it out. But they don't just come to the planet. They come literally right to the spot of it to, like, look at it up close? Like, that's what they're doing?
Maybe they have some way to detect it.
Hmm. Okay.
We have technology in the U.S. that identifies when foreign powers actually test nuclear devices. If you look back, there's an interesting article about when Israel tested a nuclear device in the mid-70s, late 1970s, and the U.S. did pick up on that. So I think that we already do that sort of thing here on Earth, so I think it's plausible that other, you know, if someone was more technologically advanced, they could easily pick up on that.
Okay, sure, and they want to know what we're up to or what it looks like, or maybe even what our own capabilities are. I mean, I'm thank you, Robert. I'm open to any of this stuff, though I agree with our guests who said it's hard to read into sort of alien motivations, which leads me to Chris from Rochester who writes, maybe we can piggyback off what Robert asked and talked about. Chris says, question for your brain trust, do you think it's a good idea to let ourselves be known to the rest of a possibly hostile universe? That's an ongoing question. It goes back decades in science now, and a lot of people have a lot of very different views. Jacob Huck Misra, what do you make of Robert's idea that, you know, that ostensible visitations have been, or sightings have happened, where these nuclear tests have happened, and Chris is wondering, should we be very careful not to advertise ourselves?
Right. So for the first question for Roberts, I'll kind of invert it, and I'll say, like, well, if we were to look for, because nuclear activity is would be a strong technosignature, conceivably. So if we were to look for something like that on an exoplanet that we think might have life and might have technology, it would be exceedingly unlikely for us to observe at exactly the right moment in time where that planet just happened to do a few short tests over 10 or 20 years. If civilization on that planet was, you know, launching, having nuclear detonations on a regular basis, where that's sort of the long-term history of the planet involves, you know, nuclear explosions every day or every week or month or something like that, then, you know, there would be a higher likelihood that we would observe the planet in a state when there are some nuclear residuals in its atmosphere and we would notice it. So, it's not to say that this is impossible, but if there were aliens observing Earth, they would have had to be exceedingly lucky in either watching Earth all the time with very high-resolution telescopes and, you know, or just got really lucky. And I think that just makes me skeptical as to that hypothesis. But I will say I don't like to prefer any hypothesis for this UAP thing. We don't have enough data for me to even go to any particular hypothesis. So I think I'm more interested in what would it take to detect nuclear technology elsewhere, and I think it's difficult unless it's ongoing.
Okay.
To the point about advertising ourselves, I think it's too late. The cat's out of the bag. If you build the right telescope, you can see our city lights. You can see pollutants in our atmosphere. You could maybe see the cities themselves. You know, forget about radio waves and other radar and things like that. So whether or not it's a good idea, I think the cat's out of the bag. But I think because the cat's out of the bag, if there were aliens waiting around to destroy us as soon as we, you know, invented television, we should be dead by now. So I'm not concerned.
Ravi, what do you think?
Yeah, so I think this is exactly what Jacob and we were thinking about actually past few days. It's the way we are trying to think about what if we are discovered is like is similar to a kid trying to hide by closing their eyes, right? Because we are already discoverable. If we can build telescopes in the next 10, 20 years and launch them and try to find advanced civilizations based on what we have been doing in, between us here. Imagine what an advanced civilization has already done. So there is, it doesn't matter what we do, like Jacob is trying to say that the cat's out of the bag. We may have already been discovered. So it's not like we are actively doing or we have to actively do something to prevent ourselves from detection. It's not up to us.
I knew all those neon lights in Vegas was a bad idea, Adam Frank. but I think Jacob and Robbie are making me feel a little better, Adam. They said, look, we're probably fine. If they want to find us, they can find us if they've got the technology. It's not like we're going to hide ourselves at this point here. So some closing thoughts from you, Adam, as we can we even assume any motives out there? I mean, how do you look at this, Adam?
Yeah, I think the motives thing is very difficult to do. I'm a little bit more, I've read too many science fiction films, with wolves between the stars, as they say. I mean, it's true that someone who was really looking, could find us. But I am a little bit, I think for somebody to beam very high power messages, to really like flash a laser in the cat's eyes, which is what, some of the idea of what METI, messaging extraterrestrial intelligence involves is pretty, turning on a Klieg light. I think no individual astronomer should do that themselves. There should be some, we should decide that as a species. That's one place I would differ a little bit. But I think they're right. If somebody's somebody nearby is carrying out the kind of investigations that we're doing, we would probably already be seen. Hopefully nobody wants lunch.
But remember, nearby is a relative term in space, and there's not a whole lot of nearby going on. Also, time is a relative term, and we've been around for a long time, but we haven't been technological for hardly a blink of an eye. Adam Frank, thanks for making time. We should do this more often. I had a great time.
We should. It's so much fun.
Thank you, Adam. Jacob Huck Misra, Senior Research Investigator at Blue Marble Space Institute of Science. I'm grateful for the time and expertise. Thank you, Jacob.
Thanks so much for having me.
Ravi Kumar Koparapu, a planetary scientist at NASA Goddard. Thank you, Ravi.
Thank you for having me.
And Adam's book, by the way, Light of the Stars. There's still so much interesting ideas out there. Let's do this more often. Emma Ray Stein, Megan Mack, Rob Braden, Evan Dawson saying, have a great afternoon.